Matthew 27, verses 45 through 49, read. From noon on, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And about 3 o'clock, Jesus cried with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lima sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of the bystanders heard it, they said, "This man is calling for Elijah." At once, one of them ran and got a sponge, filled it with sour wine, put it on a stick, and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, "Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him." Perhaps I am wrong in my assumption, and no doubt sermonizers and exegetes much more experienced and imaginative than myself have drawn attention to this before. But I imagine that when most of us read or hear these words, spoken from the mouth of Christ on the cross, dying an unjust and gruesome human death, in anguish, in abandonment, psychic trauma detonating through body and mind, we assume he speaks these words to God. My God," he says twice, "why have you forsaken me?" It's entirely reasonable then that we might think so. But in the time I've had to consider these words and this moment again, I've grown increasingly uncertain. As he draws the word twice from his lips, without question, Jesus, in his agony, registers fully the hellish absence of God. But I do wonder whether the rest he spoke instead to the passers-by who antagonized him, to the elite who mocked him, to the bandits on his either side who taunt him, even to Mary and Mary, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee who followed him from Galilee, and to the onlookers and bystanders otherwise, all of whom witnessed to this repugnant human spectacle. In other words, I cannot help but wonder if Jesus spoke or speaks these words to us. This consideration is the result of rereading the work of liberation theologians John Sobrino and the late Ignacio Ellacuría, both of whom have written about the decidedly Christian task of bringing down the crucified people of history from the cross. While some of us may be uncomfortable comparing all the crucified people of history with Jesus, like Sobrino and Ellacuría, there are those writing out of traditionally marginalized conditions and traditions and cultures and perspectives who insist upon this comparison and the truth it reveals. For them, it is difficult, if not impossible, to understand these figures, these stories, these moments any other way. Such is the case for James Cone as well, who, writing about decades of American history in which white Americans unlawfully but ungovernably lynched black Americans, discerns in each of these instances that, quote, "every time a white mob lynched a black person, they lynched Jesus." So I reread this word today, not so much in terms of Jesus crying out to God, but Jesus crying out to the observers who did nothing to stand in the way of an unjust and immoral crucifixion. Much the same way victims of civil unrest or victims of mob violence cry out in their own moments of distress and agony. To the passers-by who mocked him, I imagine Jesus asking, "What kept you from standing in between me and those who would nail me to this cross? Why have you forsaken me?" To the elite who antagonized him, What kept you from standing in between me and those who would nail me to this cross? Why have you forsaken me? To the bandits nailed to crosses on his either side, what is it that keeps you from suffering in solidarity with me? Why have you forsaken me? Even to Mary and Mary and the mother, why have you followed me only to stop short, that you might struggle to bring me down? Why have you forsaken me? In the same way, might not the crucified people of today look down at us and ask, Jesus having claimed you, what keeps you from standing squarely, existentially, in between us and our crucifiers, from following Christ to our crosses? Why don't you bring us down? Why have you forsaken us? To be clear, my interpretation is not to understand Jesus crying out in condemnation or accusation or even despair. Instead, I hear him crying out in bewilderment and bafflement, in confusion and exhaustion. Why are you afraid, you of little faith? Jesus asks in Matthew 8. You of little faith, why did you doubt? Jesus asks in Matthew 14. You of little faith, do you still not perceive? Jesus asks again in Matthew 16. And in the next chapter, you faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you? How much longer must I put up with you? And then finally from the cross, the human in him dying, why have you forsaken me? Perhaps he's just that hard on his disciples. And perhaps he never expected much of onlookers at Golgotha. But I read his final words as cadence to a recurring question, a recurring confusion that transcends any particular place, time, or audience. We are not called to sit still, to merely offer help from several steps removed or when it's convenient, and certainly not to privatize faith in a hope of salvation only for ourselves. Instead, Jesus called us to follow all the way, if need be, in service to the crucified of our day. Quote, before the spectacle of this cross, we are called to more than contemplation and adoration, writes James Cone. Similarly, Dietrich Bonhoeffer insists that, quote, inactive waiting and seeing or impassive standing by are not Christian attitudes. Christians are prompted to action and suffering in solidarity, not just by personal bodily experience, but by the experience incurred by their fellows for whose sake Christ himself suffered. We are called then, unequivocally, in the righteous freedom of obedience, to bring down all the crucified from the cross, if not to keep them from it, that no one should ever feel forsaken this way again. Dear God, let this be done, and let it be done through us. Amen. Stand, please, as you're able, and we'll sing, O Sacred Head, Now Wounded, number 163 in your hymnal.